Hello everybody, this is Curtis from Tremble, letting you know that we are brought to you by Shudder. Shudder is the horror movie streaming service that brings you all the latest and greatest that horror has to offer. But you don't have to take my word for it. You can use TremblePod, that's TREMBLEPOD, when you sign up for an account. This will give you a free 30-day trial on us, so you can check it out for yourself. With that said, let's get on with this week's episode. Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tremble, the horror movie podcast. I'm your host, Kurt. With me, as always, Stephen Taylor. How are you two doing?
Good today. It's nice and sunny outside here.
Yeah, doing good. It's nice in the Okanagan Valley as well. It's pretty out here.
I got up this morning, I saw it was overcast, and I'm like, great, I could be lazy today. Doing my stuff, and now I look out, and it's getting sunny out, and I'm like, god damn it, now I gotta go do something.
Isn't it always gorgeous in the Okanagan also?
Yeah, generally, yeah. I mean, when the clouds part, it's very nice. But I mean, anywhere, like even if it's overcast, the mountains are close enough, like I always still see them. The lakes on either side of our town here, so it's all, It's always pretty picturesque. So there's never a complaint about my scenery at all, for sure.
Nice. Mm.
It's always the stereotype I hear about it.
Yeah, it is. It's picturesque out here.
Yep.
Yeah. And then the forest fires hit, and then it's just like, ugh.
Yeah. And then it gets smoky. But then we're guarded from the harsh sun by the smoke. Like, it's weird. I don't know. It's a weird thing. It's super weird.
Speaking of weird and sunshine, Midsommar.
Just before we head in, I just wanted to say that I'm having a pretty good horror week so far.
Yeah.
Because I finally got to watch Bliss.
Oh yeah.
On Shudder. Oh man, that movie. Oh, that movie is wicked. That movie is like a dirty neon bulb that's reflecting on a Clive Barker story. Like, it's so fucking crazy. There's one gore shot near the end. Spoiler Terry, but she basically snaps a dude's neck open like a ketchup bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I was like, holy shit, that was well done. So I if you follow me on Twitter at the Steeple Dead, I tweeted my love for it, and I got some love back from Joe Bagos, which I was very happy about, because man, that, I mean, he made that and VFW as like the same year.
Like, oh wow, VFW is also really good.
I haven't seen it yet. I can't wait to see that movie. And then I assume you guys probably have seen this. I know Kurt's seen it. I saw Invisible Man on Thursday.
Oh, yep. I haven't seen that yet, but I've heard so many good things about it.
It's so good, but I think the best thing about this movie is how it transcends the genre in like ways that I think could be like cathartic to almost watch on screen.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know you've brought it up before, Kurt, but this is a movie that's basically about the centrifugal force of abusive relationships. Gaslighting is a huge point of this movie, and above everything, that message, believe women. I'm gonna get in my political, my soapbox here, my socio-political soapbox here, but I don't. It's so crazy that we don't. That we just sidestep all these women's stories and stuff like that so easily. Mm-hmm. And it's just, I don't know. It's something that has to change. And if we keep talking about it in mainstream movies like this, the conversation's still open. So I praise Lee Whannell, and I also praise him for actually bringing Elizabeth Moss in to kind of rewrite her stuff as well. It was really great.
Yeah. Yeah, I mostly enjoyed the movie. I did that thing that was funny, though. It was trying to be like a little more art housey than most other horror flicks. And then there's also this like really cheesy dialogue that kind of belongs in like a Commando movie, where I was like, oh man. Some of it was pretty cheesy, but that was my only complaint about the movie. I largely really enjoyed
it. I love the cinematography too, because they show a lot of blank space, and it is so unsettling. Anytime they pan over to like an empty part of the room and they don't make any mention, there's no music cues, there's nothing to it, you shudder. You're just like, ooh, this is not good. That's
Well, cool. I have to see this then.
Yeah, it's great.
It's
And I think there's more coming. I think they've already talked about doing an Invisible Woman movie. So,
well, yeah, well, Lee Whannell just signed a co-deal with Blumhouse and Universal. So they're saying more Universal monsters, maybe not just Invisible Men.
Yeah.
So, yeah, put Lee Whannell at the head of this, and I think we have a we have a better dark universe than we've ever been promised before.
I think he was saying that like he would redo Dracula as like a psychopath or something like that. I was like, yeah, that's good. Do that.
Yeah, I'm in. Did you watch the miniseries on Netflix?
Yeah,
With Clive Bang and
For the Invisible Man.
No, for Dracula, the... the guys that did... it was Stephen Moffat and the guys that did Sherlock.
Okay.
Did Dracula. I watched episode one. It's only three episodes, and they're each, like, feature length. I dug episode one. The makeup effects are really freaking cool.
That's awesome.
Stephen Moffat, interesting. He did some Doctor Who at one point.
Yes, too. Yes, he did. Yeah, until now the guy that did Broadchurch is running it, and that's why they brought in Jodie Whittaker, because they work very well together.
Oh, I'm so behind on that, but I'm so intrigued by her
too. Oh, yeah. You know how far back I am? I haven't even seen Peter Capaldi as Doctor Who. So.
Oh, no, I stopped halfway through his season, and I don't know why, because he was actually pretty good, so.
I love him, so.
Yeah.
I think I've seen like two episodes of Doctor Who, and that was it. So I'm out of that. But
it feels like it should be your bang, man. It really does.
I don't know.
It's a fun show for sure.
Yeah, I gotta get. There's so many things that people are telling me like I should try. Like everyone keeps telling me I should watch Vikings, and at this point I'm resigned to the fact that I'll probably never watch Vikings, even though it, like 50 people recommend it to me. It's like, watch Vikings. I'm like maybe one day. But first, let me rewatch Friday the 13th, and then I'll get back.
Yeah, there we go. Anyway, sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. I just wanted to get my horror stuff out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of good horror stuff. I did see March's Shudder lineup, and it was pretty good. Daniel,
hey, I'm waiting for that. Oh my god, I'm waiting. Daniel Isn't Real. I'm waiting for that movie. Yeah. Oh, March 26th, I believe it is on Shudder. So yeah, I'm excited for that one.
Bit of a wait, but it'll be worth it.
Yeah.
I got a screener link for that, and that was surprisingly really good. So,
yeah, I'm excited for it.
Cool. So yeah, Midsommar. The official summary: a couple travel to Sweden, to visit their friend's rural hometown for its fabled Midsommar festival. But what begins as an idyllic retreat quickly devolves into an increasingly violent and bizarre competition at the hands of a pagan cult. Yep, that's it. That's the movie in a nutshell. It's interesting too with the cult, because you kind of can tell right away that they're a cult, but it's like, are they really Maleficent, or are they just weirdos that have like a very archaic way of thinking? And I like that the movie sort of unpeels the layers and sort of shows, oh yeah, there's some messed up shit going on here. So,
but okay, initially I just want to start this off because how do we feel about Pele? The first act of the movie, at least,
like, he seems like such a good dude at first.
He does, yeah. Especially when he's trying to talk to Danny. Like, I don't think he's in any kind of a bad space when he's trying to relate to her about tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
I really like, that's the thing about Pele, and I you know, the whole cult too, is I really feel like they come from like a place of caring and of like healing and like. Yeah. Support and gathering around. I mean, the scream crying scene is just so indicative of that, of just like, we will shoulder your burden as well. I have such mixed feelings about this movie, honestly.
Well, it seems like at least they really believe that they need to be doing what they're doing, and that everything else, they're just kind of regular, empathetic human beings who are really in tune with their community and really close with their community. And then they just also happen to maybe sacrifice some people, you know? Yeah. Like, it's this weird religious thing, but they're also, they have this other side. It makes me all mixed up inside. Because Pele seems like such a good dude, but then at the end of the movie, he's still screaming and burning people just like everybody else, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, Pele is the plant, right? That brings, I essentially, I Danny was the focus that he wanted to bring over, and you don't really know that till the end, right? Yeah. But I mean, because initially you think, oh, well, only Christian, Josh, and Mark are supposed to go over with mm-hmm. Pele, and that's it. And I mean, arguably, Mark is just a piece of shit human being.
Yeah.
Like, he is awful. I don't feel that about Josh. I feel Josh is just kind of inquisitive. Yeah. He just wants to know what's going on, and I mean, that is ultimately his demise.
Yeah.
The academic, for sure.
Mm-hmm. But Christian is so conflicted because I think he's one of those people that wants to make that he wants everybody to be happy. I don't think Christian's a bad dude. I think he's misguided. I think he's massively misguided.
Yes, here's the thing. I rewatched this last night because any opportunity I can to watch this, I love it. Christian treats everyone, whether he knows it or not, he treats everyone in this movie like shit. He constantly lies to make himself look better all of the time. Every time someone calls him out for his bullshit, he's like, what do you mean? I don't know what you're talking about. And he like flips it around on them until they're the one that seems like they're freaking out when really they're justified most of the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not that I'm saying he deserved anything that happened to him in the movie, because I agree that he just seems like a misguided douche for the most part.
Yeah.
And that if he just, you know, took some responsibility for himself, he might not actually be that bad of a dude. But
yeah. Well, I mean, Danny being as bad in her PTSD as she is, Christian's making that worse. And he has consistently been making that worse. That is not a secret at all. But you just wonder how conscious Christian is of these qualities that he has, right? Because you know what I mean? Like again, it's that trying to please everybody, but disappointing everybody.
Mm-hmm. You know? Because everyone can kind of see through what you're actually doing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When I first watched the movie, I was getting Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory vibes, where I was just thinking that, like, at the end it was going to be revealed that, like, Danny was the purest of heart or something, and I was just like, that's how it's going to go, right?
You inherit Harga. This is yours now.
The rest of them, they weren't as, you know, pure as you. Yeah. Which is kind of funny.
I haven't seen it, but that's the director's cut, right? That's what happens?
Actually, it's good that you mentioned that, because the director's cut does have some interesting stuff. It's mainly fleshes out Christian a bit more, and I think it sort of makes him less of a black and white, like, a-hole. Mm-hmm. It kind of explains more of why he does what he does. And I think that's kind of like, I don't know, like him cheating on Danny at the end there and all that, like, it's kind of it's bad stuff, but it's also like he's put in like a situation where he's got a lot going on, and I think the director's cut kind of illustrates that a little bit better than the theatrical cut. But
I mean to be fair, cheating, I he was drugged, so I don't necessarily know, like, that could probably be considered rape, you know, like he was probably raped.
Yeah,
I
kind of feel like that too. Like, I feel like he was so scared in that scene.
Mm-hmm.
He is so. I don't know if he knew if it was real or not too.
Mm.
Yeah. Like,
there's a certain point of that movie where I think reality separates from every character.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
And they don't know where they are anymore. I could even throw it back to when they don't know what time of day it is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, like being purposely almost disoriented just from the location that they're in. And there definitely is a point during that, or I don't, it's not an orgy scene, but like it feels like it almost, where he snaps out of it. And that's when he starts to freak the fuck out, you know?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, that's it's terrifying.
Like when you can kind of like, you know, like he's like, oh, cool. Like I get to, you know, meet this girl or whatever. And then it like just increasingly gets weirder. Like with the girl, the other woman standing around, he's like, okay, this is getting a little weirder, but I'll stick with this. And then, like, they all start making all those noises, and he's just like, okay, this is getting weirder. Yeah.
I mean, but at the head of all of this, you have, I mean, how great everybody is in this movie, because there's not a wasted role in this movie. No. At the head of it, the puppeteering of this by Ari Aster, Powell Porgazowski, and the Hacks and Cloak, who does the music. Oh my god, like,
oh, the music, like, is so good in this movie.
It's, oh my god, everything's running at like 120% in this movie, and it's It's insane. I don't know how Porkazowski put this movie together, like, especially with the drug, that kind of warped camera where it's kind of like bubbling out at you and stuff like that. Like, I don't know how you storyboard any of this stuff. Like, it's insane.
Yeah. It's also weird to think, like, this year we're not getting an Ari Aster flick.
No, I don't even, what is that, does he even have anything listed of what he's doing, or?
No, he's kind of hinted that his next project might be a pure comedy, like, not horror at all, which I don't
believe. Oh my god.
I just.
No, this could be really interesting, though, man.
I feel like that guy loves horror a little too much. Like, I feel like even if he tried to make a pure comedy, it would still be, like, horror comedy, and then he'll be like giving interviews where he's like, it's a comedy. It's like, yeah, but people are dying. He's like, yeah, it's a comedy. Well,
but I mean, you know, we talked a little bit about the start, and you know, Taylor brought up Hereditary as well. There, he has carved his own little area out of horror,
yeah,
and been like, this is Aster's town. And if you're going to come in here, you're going to not only leave with this horror story in your mind, but all these thematic thoughts in your head, all these questions, all these, like, deeply human tics that I believe we all have and we all exhibit. Like, he brings such a cerebral nature to horror that I, you know, besides Robert Eggers, we haven't really seen a lot.
No.
Yeah. One of the things that I really love about both of these movies, are Midsommar and Hereditary, at least for Ari Aster, is they delve so deep into each of the characters. Mm-hmm. Like, you really see the full scope of what a person is dealing with, and you feel those emotions with them as they're going through it a lot of the times. And especially since both of those movies have such strong lead characters that experience such intense, like, emotional pain. Like, they, like, Hereditary has the scene where she's just sobbing in bed, and then there's the same for Midsommar, where she's sobbing into Christian's lap after she finds out about her parents. Like, it's so heart-wrenching both times, and it kind of, that type of emotion just pulls you deeper into it with the characters.
And now I'm wondering what the, you know, if he's moving into making a comedy, your leads so far have been Toni Collette and Florence Pugh. Where do you go from there?
Adam Brody. There you go.
Ah! I'm in.
Yeah, that would be cool.
No, especially because we're doing a Karen Kuzama movie next. As the Adam Brody connection there is, like, some of my favorite shit. Yeah, bring it. Ari Aster, Adam Brody, do it. Do it now. Even bring Mark O'Brien from Ready or Not, because fuck, that guy's underrated.
Yeah. It's a shame, too, because Ari Aster used to have a Squarespace website, which I visited once just out of curiosity. And you think, like, watching these movies, oh, this guy's got to be fucked up. But then you go and look at his website, and it was amazing, because you remember it was, like, Superbad, where, like, the kid would draw, like, the dick drawings? It's like that, but he had dick drawings that were demonic on his website. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you're super fucked up, dude. I love it. Give this guy more money to make horror movies.
Please. A24, just make him your dude.
Yeah.
Honestly.
Yeah. No, it was kind of funny because I was just like, this explains everything.
Yeah. Well, let's just put it, A24 is getting to this point where they are, you know, they've been making all these really great genre movies and all these great movies from directors that have now become the forefront. So now, heading into this year, A24 is putting out a movie like The Green Knight. That's where we're at right now. And if you haven't seen that trailer, please pause this podcast and go watch that trailer right now. It is fucking amazing.
You know, and I'm a little disappointed that, yeah, we're not getting an Ari Aster flick, but it seems like they're getting directors that can kind of fit in a similar aesthetic, like, movie. And so,
I mean, they got Trey Edward Schultz, they've got Robert Eggers, they've got David Lowry, the Safdies, Claire Dennis, all these people that are making movies for A24 are the most exciting directors I can possibly think of. And I guarantee if I was to compile a list of 10 directors that you have to be watching right now, most of them are making A24 films.
Cool. Why we chose this movie? I mean, it's pretty great.
Because it's probably one of the greatest films of all time, maybe. I don't know.
Just, you know, no big deal. No, I think it does a good job of, like, putting in a good sense of dread and the descent into madness for Danny. But also, dude, it's a cult double feature with The Invitation. So, good time to talk about it. If you haven't seen this movie yet, I feel like it's impossible. Like, we talk about this movie every so often, so... It's something you should be watching, it's particularly before listening to this. So don't ever listen to this and then be like, "Oh, I'm gonna go watch it afterwards." No, should have already seen it. Hopefully not, at least.
Yeah, because we're gonna hit spoil. I mean, we've already gotten spoiler.
Yeah, I think we've already given some stuff away, but
yeah.
Hopefully you're not mad at us. If you are, sorry. cool. Oh, when was the first time you all watched this? I guess it was probably around opening week.
Not for me. I was in Penticton. We didn't get it. So, Blu-ray. When Elevation sent me the Blu-ray, that's when I got to see it. And I was, like, inches away from my television the whole movie. I totally spaced on who edited this movie, but oh my god, you're the greatest.
Yeah,
that cut from, you know, when Pele is trying to in the first act where Pele is trying to relate to her and she runs into the bathroom and it cuts to the airplane bathroom.
Oh, it's so good.
It's one of the most incredible cuts I've ever seen in my entire life. I love it. And it's up there with, like, a lot of Edgar Wright cuts, because that man's great at a smash cut. I adore smash cuts so much. And this is just one of the best.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love a good smash cut. First time I watched this was at a screening, and it was amazing because one...
Was it a Vancouver screening?
Yeah.
It was? Okay.
Yeah. And there was some great moments. Apart from the movie, I do remember one critic taking out a sandwich to eat, and he started eating it. And this was before the old people jump off the cliff scene. And I see him eat the sandwich, and he's eating it now. And for, like, you know, maybe a couple minutes, he's eating it. And then that scene comes up, and he takes out the bag and just threw up into the bag. And I'm just like, I felt so bad for him, but I'm also like, this is perfect marketing for this movie. You should have been like the movie that made the film critics throw up.
Well, also, this gets back to that. I think it was our last episode, or maybe the episode before, of eating. Oh, when we were talking about society, eating during horror movies. Like, what is your tolerance level, right? I definitely couldn't eat in the final scene of Society. It's just too gooey for me to do it.
Mm-hmm.
I generally don't eat during horror movies. I'm just like, I think it's kind of weird, but
it is. It does feel weird. It feels sociopathic to a certain degree that nothing of this will ever turn off my appetite, because I'll always be hungry.
Also, it's like, usually I'll go see these at the movie theater, and it's just like, what is there to eat? I could have popcorn or Reese's Pieces. Like, I'm okay. I don't need more brown foods in my life. I'll just, you know.
Okay, I will throw a bone for pulled pork poutines. When you go to Cineplex theaters, they're not super great, but
no.
Cineplex, and that was my jam.
Yep, I'm pulled into that. Yeah, I'm into that too. Or, you know what? You throw anything on fries. You throw me a chili fries or a cheese fries.
That's true.
That's kind of my shit, man.
During Invisible Man, I was munching on something, and person next to me is like, I was eating during like one of the bigger jump scares, and it didn't affect me for some reason. They were like, "You're a psychopath." I'm like, "Yeah, probably."
Well, and the thing about that movie in particular, and people eating and stuff, like, I saw it the first screening here in Penticton. There was probably, like, because it's Penticton, there was probably, I don't know, 8 other people in the theater with me. But in a large theater where people are snacking and chomping and crinkling and everything, that would drive me freaking nuts, because a lot of that movie is quiet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why I'm a little cautious about seeing Quiet Place 2, because I feel
I remember your first experience was not great. No, so
I imagine it's just gonna be like hey man, better go go to the library after the movie. He's like, shut the fuck up, Blake.
God. I will was fucking that, wait, murder
I don't,
you.
I don't know if I heard the experience of A Quiet Place. Was it just loud people?
Oh yeah, it was like loud eaters, loud everything. It was just, it was a horror movie.
Whispers and like,
yeah, oh yeah, like the whole point of that movie is like, well, it's quiet, but it doesn't take into account that people are not quiet. So in these scenes that are supposed to be like these quiet moments or whatever, all you hear is just people munching on food and talking to each other. And you're just like, it's like, I can actually hear people making out. Like, this is weird.
I feel like those would be the same people who, in A Quiet Place universe, could not resist the snack so much.
Yeah.
Or the whispering so much that they get got, you know?
Yeah. Like, I rewatched A Quiet Place recently on Netflix, and it was nice. Like, in my place, it was quiet. I actually enjoyed it. But I'm like, I know A Quiet Place 2 will not be that. And I'll just...
Mm-hmm. Speaking of A Quiet Place, did you guys see my... it's not out yet. It's a couple of weeks. But you guys see my Mondo Steelbook that I got?
Yes, that looked really good.
Oh, man, baby. It's so pretty. It's so pretty.
Does it come with a separate audio track of people just talking during the movie?
No. That would be fucking awful.
The theater experience.
Yeah. Make you want to kill people while not being with them.
So I was thinking after the movie, we can go to Robert's place and finish some episodes of Game of Thrones. Like, shut the fuck up.
What is... this is a 4K, though.
4K is nice.
So yeah, I don't know if it was... I don't think it was released on 4K before. But I don't know. I'm getting this renewed love of Steelbook. Because I've gotten a few. Because they sent me Shutter Island on Steelbook. Mm. Which is also a movie that I hate. It drove me nuts in theaters, that movie. I hated it in theaters. But it's just because Scorsese's messing with you the entire film.
Yeah.
So, and I didn't get that until the end. Mm. And I was like, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah.
Steelbooks are my thing because they also sent me Galaxy Quest on Steelbook.
Ooh.
Nice. Which, I mean, that movie's awesome. And,
that's one of my favorites.
Recently, Hunt for Red October, which I hadn't seen in...
There you go.
Years and years. So, yeah, Steelbook's awesome. My shit. It's my jam.
I feel like if you're going to get a physical copy of something, you may as well go all out, you know? Get the good artwork with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you want one that's going to survive, you know, a nuclear blast.
Mm-hmm.
Right? That's what it's all about. So, like, at the end of the day, I'm like, oh, well, at least still watch Quiet Place.
I have literally bought...
My skin's falling off, but I can watch this movie.
Yeah. So relatable.
I've literally bought Steelbooks just because, like, the movie has, like, a separate movie or director's commentary or something. Mm-hmm. I'm like, damn. Like,
yep.
I shouldn't be buying this, but I will. Because that's my big thing. I'm a huge fan of, like, commentaries and behind-the-scenes stuff.
Me too. And I'm a collector's edition guy. I'm a Blu-ray... I'm a DVD and Blu-ray collector. I have, you know, 2,000 of them. I love it. Like, it's just kind of my jam, so... When people are like, oh, it's all available on Netflix, or it's all like someone, like I got Roma on Criterion recently. They're like, oh, that's just on Netflix. I'm like, yeah, but look at this thing. Like, look at it. And it's got a massive booklet that's going to be compiled by Charon with all shots from the movie and stuff. Like, you can't get that shit anywhere else.
I do love how like Netflix has become like McDonald's now. It's like, well, I could have a nice steak dinner, or I could just go eat a Big Mac again. Like,
yeah, yep, yeah, that's essentially it.
Yeah.
I don't get special features. I don't get commentary. I don't get anything like that. And I still want that shit. I still do.
Yeah.
Even just sometimes having bloopers is fun.
Oh yeah.
Right. I always watch a gag reel, even if it's a terrible movie. I'll watch the gag reel.
Oh yeah, it always makes me laugh when people fuck up.
I'm so happy that the Endgame Blu-ray had a commentary. I was just like, yes, please, that's what I want.
Hell yeah. And the Russos are very, very intricate in their commentaries. I don't know if you noticed that. Like, how deep they go. They'll even talk about what their mistakes were, what their regrets were. Like, I love the transparency of their commentaries. I think they're great.
I think they know that the people who are listening to them are the people who are big fans of that stuff in general. So it's like, you gotta show up. So
also the Taika Waititi one for Jojo Rabbit's excellent.
Yeah, yeah, that one's another great one too. You go, if you like a movie, don't just rely on streaming. Like, go get a Blu-ray that's got like a nice DVD or Blu-ray commentary track. So
hell yes, endorsed.
Yes,
by the Tremble Pod.
It's part of the fun. You know, like, I'll even listen to some of these Friday the 13th with commentary tracks, and it's just like, it's funny because they were all like, ah, we were drunk, and we were just like, well, let's put this mask on.
Anyway. I need a commentary track for Nightmare on Elm Street 2, Freddy's Revenge. Because I need, like, a point-by-point commentary of, like, what the fuck was going on?
It's like, well, we thought we'd make this movie as gay as humanly possible.
But even in the Never Sleep Again documentary, they're like, whoa, we didn't know it was so gay.
There was that documentary that came out. That was the documentary that came out was really good.
So good. It's intricate. It's long. Is it on Shudder, the Never Sleep Again?
I think that one is. No, but there was a separate one for Nightmare 2.
Oh, right. And it hasn't been released yet, has it?
I don't think so. I'm waiting you for saw that it, to come out. Right? Yeah, it was really good. It really, like, there's even points where, like, they sit them down and the guy's like, you know this was gay, right? And he's like, well, we didn't know. It's like, how did you not know? Like,
the basketball coach. Yeah. Like, any, like, come on, man. Come on.
Like, I get trying to play cool, but we're past that point now. Just admit that you knew it was going to be, like, hardcore.
And even to even pretend that you had a female love interest in that movie is, like, a slap in the face. Like, it's...
Yeah.
It's... Everything is so obvious. So obvious.
Yeah. Cool. Well, let's move on to some emails here. First is from Robert. Robert says, I'm confused. Why did she smile at the end when her boyfriend was toasting inside?
I thought that was pretty...
I thought it was pretty obvious, yeah.
I think, like, it's pretty damn obvious.
I think she's been subjected to so much in her life, and, you know, she not only has found a group of people that accept her for who she is, but they literally took a toxic part of her life out and burned her to life. So
There's no other point in the film where she smiles with so much sincerity.
Yeah.
Every other smile she has in the movie has some pain behind it, has some acting behind it, has some force behind it of, like, I don't really feel like this, but here you go.
Yeah.
That is the first true smile, true emotion that, like, a happy emotion that she has in that movie. It's because she's burnt away everything of her life that has brought her down. She has relieved her post-traumatic stress. She is free.
Yeah.
And that fire cleanses. I don't know how how else to say it. Like, it's, she is truly free.
Christian was like the last thing tying her to the reality of her family's death, basically, right? And as soon as he's gone, all she has left is the support of this cult, essentially.
Which I do love that common element of between Hereditary and this, where, like, one character sort of just kind of gets empowered a little bit in the end, and you're just like, I think this is probably going to result in the deaths of hundreds of thousands, but that's okay.
Yeah.
Like, this person's feeling pretty good about themselves, finally.
It's because it's that journey, you know what I mean? Yeah. And, like, I mean, the biggest swerve in Hereditary is thinking that Annie is the main character.
Mm-hmm.
Annie is not the main character. It's always been Peter. It always will be Peter.
Yeah.
And that last moment, you realize this is all for Peter, you know?
Yeah.
It's kind of the same with Midsommar, except for Midsommar, you know this is Danny's story.
Yeah.
And it's funny, to a certain degree, is how superfluous that Josh and Mark are in this story, but they're just really a means to an end.
For sure.
And a little bit of comic relief. Like, the beginning where they have first take the shrooms or whatever, and Mark is freaking out, that was some good comic relief in the beginning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But the end of both of those characters is so, like, the heavy breathing wearing his face is so fucked up.
Oh, yeah.
So fucked up.
Oh, yeah.
You can hear, too, at the end when Christian is in the bear, you can hear his breathing too, like his panicked breaths, and it's terrifying.
Breathing's actually a huge part of this movie, because also think about that tourist that's all strung up in the stable as well. All you can hear in that scene is breathing as well.
His lungs are still going.
So breathing, rhythmic breathing is a huge part of Midsommar. Like, aside, like almost like a guiding lifeline to that movie.
So, cool. Speaking of shrooms, George says Midsommar plus the Holy Mountain plus shrooms equals best Saturday ever.
Well, he's got my love, because anybody that brings Johto into the conversation is automatically like a friend, so we're now friends.
Yeah.
Just to let you know, against your will, you brought up Johto, so we're friends now.
I mean, the Holy Mountain, very similar aesthetics to this.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say so.
Adding it to my watch list on Letterboxd then.
Definitely. Yeah. Do it for sure. You know, I want to see Ari Aster's, I don't know if he's done it already, a trip through the Criterion Library. I'd like to see what movies he picks.
Oh, yeah.
You know how filmmakers do those little quick videos for Criterion?
Yeah.
Yeah, like Claire Dennis did one, Safdie's did one, like Robert Eggers did one, like a bunch of them did one. I want to see his.
Yeah. No, the Holy Mountain's great, and
yeah.
Also like a really fucked up horror movie. Kind of want to talk about that one of these days, because there's scenes of corpses being strewn around. There's weird shit with animals. Like it's a fucked up movie, but
yeah.
See, that's why it's like, do you really want to take shrooms before you watch these movies? I feel like there could be some emotional disturbance that happens that would maybe turn that into a bad trip. I don't know.
Well,
maybe
no, that's just it's probably not a good idea.
No, well, because essentially what shrooms are supposed to do is like a hard reboot for your brain. So like doing that while watching something decidedly this cerebral and this both of those movies are so meant to get inside of your psyche of a sober person. So what would they do to a person that's so easily under the influence?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
Even just the beginning of Midsommar where they're having arguments with each other was like, oh, that was still uncomfortable for me. Like watching them almost like argue with each other through that part. Like, I feel like even that would messed up if I was under the influence of something.
Oh yeah.
I think if you're under the influence and watching Midsommar, you're gonna black out and wake up with a ticket to Sweden in your hand.
Like, weird. Why am I in this burning house?
I'm on a spiritual journey now. This is it.
Well, I guess it's too late now.
Once
you're in the burning, pyramid, you're done.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's what I imagine. I wake up and there's a burning house and I'm like, well, worst ways to go out, I guess, so.
At least I'm still on drugs.
Yeah. But I would definitely recommend the Holy Mountain. Shrooms, less so much, but Holy Mountain, definitely go watch that.
I agree.
And the funny thing is like, I know of the Holy Mountain, but I never made that connection between it and Midsommar until this email, so thank you for reminding me, because now that I'm thinking about it, I'm like, yeah, there's a lot of similarities there, visually.
That's a great email. And I think Holy Mountain's on Criterion Channel, so.
Yeah, so if you want to just melt your mind with a weird-ass movie, there you go.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to some awards here. Best line in the movie, you have a favorite one?
I liked a lot of Pele's lines, because a lot of them were a little foreshadowy. Like, when they're sitting around the table, when Christian first gets the call from Danny, where she's learned that her parents are dead.
Yeah.
He has some line, because they're talking about impregnating the waitress that comes up to their table, and Pele turns and goes, and don't forget about all the Swedish women you will impregnate in June. And that is so foreshadowing to basically the entire rest of the movie. And then just like his really comforting lines where he's like, does he hold you? Do you feel like home with him?
Yeah.
Like
that was mine. Yeah, that was mine. I feel like Pele has so like in that, like I keep going back to this character, but in that first act and some of the second act, any of his lines are just fucking so integral to the plot.
He's almost like kind of the one driving things a little bit, especially for Danny emotionally. Like he's there to like lead her to where they need her to go, basically.
Yeah.
You know what's really fucked up is Maya, after that scene, she automatically goes, I can feel it. I can feel the baby. which is like so fucked up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think that's what snaps Christian out of it too.
Yeah, it does.
He hears that and he's like, wait a second, what the fuck just happened here?
Yeah.
Typical white guy. Here's baby. He's like, oh shit, I'm out of here.
Where's the door?
Shit. I thought we were just banging for fun. My favorite line is when Christian says, I think I ate one of her pubic hairs. That one always just cracks me up.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. And then later when he's with, I don't remember the name of the character, but he's been like sequestered aside before the fucking scene basically. Yeah. And he's like, I think she put a pube in one of my, in my pie. And the lady's like, that sounds right.
Yeah.
Like that's it.
Sounds about right for this, type of, event. So
yeah.
Oh, that line always cracks me up. It's like, oh yeah, I think she's into you. Yeah. Yeah. I think she put a pubic hair in my soup.
Yep. Just totally normal everyday events.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
The other favorite line is skull.
Yeah. That one's always great too. I don't know. That's so good. There's a lot of funny lines in this movie. Like, surprisingly so.
It's darkly hilarious. Because Aster, man. Aster's just got this, like, really fucked up sense of humor.
Yep.
And he's going to pepper it in places that you don't expect it to show up.
No.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of why, like, this works so well. It's like, he's kind of one of those guys where it's like, it's a little bit of horror, it's a little bit of comedy, there's some drama stuff in there too. It still kind of circles back around to being a horror movie, but like, there's a lot of other elements in there as well.
So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
There's definitely a lot of depth.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Best performance. I mean,
Florence.
Yeah. Oh my goodness, yes.
Not only is she the best performance of this movie, she's the best performance of last year. And I argue anybody to show me a performance that's better than she is in this movie. That has so many highs and lows. Like this, oh my God, this performance, she should be celebrated year after year. I think that she is going to be, I think she's going to be your Meryl Streep for the next 20, 30 years.
I hope so. She's amazing as an actor, and I follow her on Instagram, and she just seems so funny and in person.
Yeah,
I just love her. I love everything about her.
I love how she made marmalade, and then the Paddington Twitter was like, hey, "Can we be friends now?" I think it confirms Florence Pugh for Paddington 3. So
yeah, I'll put this out there, and you know, I'm not going to take a shot at Josh Gad this week, but I'm going to say Zach Braff, you treat her right, or you know, the fucking world will come down on you.
Yeah. I love how, like, there was, like, some comments on our Instagram of people being like, oh, he's so much older than you and all this, and she just replied with, like, so what or something like that. It was pretty funny. She doesn't care.
Yeah. No. Why?
Yeah.
Why can we say love is love and then we not accept people's shit, you know?
Yeah. Best kill in the movie.
Josh.
Yeah.
Josh was pretty good, but I still think the Christian burning scene at the end was fucked up. Like, that's probably going to be my favorite.
Mm.
Yeah. I do just like the Josh one, just for when you see the dude wearing Mark's face, you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah, that's true. That's pretty fucked up.
I do like that.
Yeah. I mean, essentially, there really is only, what, 4 kills in this movie?
Yeah, not a whole lot.
No. Oh, and 2 of them are suicides.
Yeah.
Was Connie, the other English student, was her death in a deleted scene or something like that? Or did they not ever really explain how she died?
I don't think they ever showed it.
Okay.
No. Which is kind of weird. Like, take some time. Show that death. Like, even if it was like, just her waiting for a car or something and she gets hit by one or something. Like, I don't know. That would have been weird. Mm-hmm. Cool. Dumbest decision. I guess pissing on the ancestral tree.
Yeah, anything that Mark does. And yeah. Mark is just a bad decision walking. And I think the casting of Will Poulter is so perfect for that because he is just a guy that lends to being a dirtbag character.
Yeah.
I hope he doesn't get like stuck in that casting for the rest of his life. But oh man, he's just got a face that you're just like, you are not thinking good things.
I do love that, like, you know, you have Christian who's there for like semi-academic purposes, and then you've got Josh who's there for academic purposes, and then you've got Mark who's just like, I'm there to like go get pussy and get drunk, and I'm like, yeah, like it's pretty realistic. I can buy that.
Yeah,
not everyone's going there for academia. So,
Are you guys a Good Place watchers?
Yes, I am.
Were you weirded out by seeing Chidi in this role?
I thought it was kind of funny that his Good Place character and this character are almost kind of the same. Like, they're both people who are so focused on academics and learning and knowledge. I thought
that was kind of funny. It feels like an Elseworlds version of him.
Yeah. Like the Good Place is after his death, basically.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
That's funny.
I think it's time to score this. 10 out of 10.
10 out of 10. Yeah. You just,
no pressure. I can't give it any less. No, I can't give it any less than a 10. I have to. Yeah. The only stipulation I have for this movie that I want to bring up before we end the podcast is I still don't quite understand if they needed to have Ruben's character, the mentally and physically handicapped character in this movie. I still don't quite understand.
Who only
if there was a purpose to that?
Yeah. He only really features in one part of the movie.
And I wonder if maybe his only purpose was to be misleading in the trailer, you know?
Was he expanded on in the director's cut?
Not particularly, no.
Okay. Okay.
I think that character is really just there to like illustrate why they bring in these people to like procreate with, so they don't have more people like that, because I think the thing is they infer like, oh, it's from incest and inbreeding and that, you know, this kind of stuff happens. So
he's the cautionary tale.
Yeah, exactly.
That they kind of trot out to show how not to do things.
He also writes their scripture. Like, he's the one who writes in the book in that temple area or something like that.
Yeah.
And, like, but that didn't factor into the rest of the plot as much as I thought it was going to, you know? Mm-hmm. Like, I thought maybe there would be more secret backstory around that. Yeah. But, like, that's the only part that, like, I felt like, well, I mean, they could have done without that and it still would have been the same movie, you know?
Yeah.
Everything else in this movie was 10 out of 10.
Did you catch that subliminal shot, Taylor, this time?
Wait, which one?
When Danny wins the competition and they're carrying her on the board, and then you see her sister with the gas mask taped to her face in the trees.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Oh my God.
Taking a look at that scene again, is she leaving that behind in that scene? Is that Wynn bleeding that off, and that's what that represents?
I don't actually remember.
Because she's trying to see. Because they're carrying her away from that position of the trees, right?
Maybe that's like, maybe, yeah, she's it's kind of almost symbolic of, it's in her past now. It's behind her.
So now the only trauma that she has left is the relationship with Christian from that point going forward. And then the next part of the movie, the next part of that movie focusing is then the sex act and all that stuff is separating them. Mm-hmm. And then the burning, right?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. Aster's probably like, no, that's not it at all. But I get.
There's so much in this movie that you can speculate on, though, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's another reason why I love this movie, is because there's just so much to it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
A lot of layers to it.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Well, Steve, where can people find more of your work?
Yeah, I am on Twitter and Instagram at The Steeple Dead. I'm also on Letterboxd. I believe I'm at The Steeple Dead as well on that. You can find my website, stevestebbing.ca, and I'm on Linda Steele's show on CKNW at 2:45 on Thursday, and then The Shift with Drex Across Canada at 11 p.m. on Thursday evenings.
All right. And Taylor, where can people find more of you on the internet?
Social media, pretty much. Instagram, Twitter, Letterboxd, at Cercianic is my username.
Nice. And I'm on Letterboxd as well, Fatal Koala, Twitter, Film Critic Kurt, and just ThringerNerds.com. Just listen to some podcasts.
Also, I feel like you're trolling on your Letterboxd as well, especially in the last week or so.
Oh, yeah.
With your review of Emma. Can I read your review of Emma?
Yes.
A more faithful adaptation of Clueless. That is a fucking masterful troll job there. Like, all these Jane Austen enthusiasts are like, what the fuck?
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Wait, what?
I don't know. I didn't know what else to say about the movie. It's basically Clueless, but better.
The Clueless was based on Emma.
Yeah. Yeah.
People's brains just breaking on that one.
Oh, I'm sure people are just like rolling it. That's probably why it only has like one like on that review, because people read it and they're just like, I do not like this at all.
this guy doesn't know who Jane Austen is.
Well, the funny thing is like, I always see these like one sentence reviews on Letterboxd that have like thousands of likes, and it's just like a one sentence usually joke. So I was like, oh, I'll try that, and then like it gets like one like, and I'm like, oh fuck, I guess I'm not that great at it. So I'll stick to my paragraph long reviews. Cool. Well, until next time, everyone. Bye for now.